Hey, what's up? Welcome back. So growing up, I really liked the movie Newsies. Big fan of the movie Newsies, okay, the musical. I loved the music, I loved Kenny Ortega's choreography, I liked the attitude of a lot of those kids. I liked that Brooklyn kid when Brooklyn would show up and be like, "Never fear, Brooklyn's here." I was always like, "Yeah, Brooklyn's cool, dude. He's got a slingshot." I like that kid. And there's this really cool scene when Jack Kelly, played by Christian Bale, really liked him too. Santa Fe, are you there? He gets up on this big thing, and he write where there's a big chalkboard that's got all the headlines and stuff, and he writes in big words "strike" across the whole chalkboard, big giant letters. And I knew that scene was cool because they're singing "The World Will Know." Maybe it "Sees the Day." I can't remember if it "Sees the Day" or "The World Will Know." I think it's "The World Will Know," because they're being like, "Here's the time, we're doing it, and the world's gonna hear our voices." And he writes a "strike" up on the board, and he tells the Newsies that they're going on strike, that they're going after the big fat cats at the top. They're going after William Randolph Hearst. They're gonna get a few extra pennies for every pape that they sell, or something like that. I don't know. As a kid, I didn't know what a strike was. I didn't know what it meant. I just knew that I liked when Jack Kelly got the other Newsies to do it, and it felt like they were doing the right thing. And I think in my lifetime, whenever a union has gone on strike, I've more or less sided with the union. And I do think that that's like generally the default position that most people in the public should be on, is like, if a union is striking against their bosses are more often than not probably in the wrong. And the union is probably being more than reasonable in striking. I don't think most labor unions want to strike. I think a strike is something that they will try to avoid at all costs. And if it has to come to a strike, if that's something that has to happen, it's usually probably because the people at the top who are in charge of making sure the people in the labor force get paid are being unreasonable with compensation and with the way that they're treating the workforce. Anyway, I'm on strike. I didn't know if I was ever going to be on strike in my life, but I'm on strike. I've been supporting the WGA for the last 11 weeks, showing up to pickets and things lending my energy to that. But my union, the Screen Actors Guild, as you may have heard, is on strike. We're doing it. And I'm one of the actors in that union who voted to authorize that strike. It was the largest authorization vote in the history of our union, as I learned from my guest today, Allie Kincaid. And I don't know. Interestingly enough, I've been hearing from a lot of people that they don't know how they're supposed to feel about this strike from actors and about what's going on in the entertainment industry. Everyone, whether they're in the entertainment industry or not, consumes what we make. Everyone's life is affected by the entertainment industry. Everybody's watching TV shows. Everybody watches movies. Everybody has some kind of emotional connection in their life to the entertainment industry. And I think because there's this highly publicized vision of actors and TV people and movie people being very wealthy and living very lavish lifestyles, it's confusing for people when we go on strike. I guess kind of like it might be like, you know, when professional athletes do it. It's like, well, what do you guys are millionaires. Why are you going on strike? And I think the case, like I said, with most strikes is if you actually look into the details of it, you'll see that like the labor force, the union behind it, isn't just doing it because they're being greedy and they just want an unfair cut of revenue. What we're asking for is fair. And I wanted my friend Allie Kincaid to come on the show today and see if she could shed some light on some of the details of what's going on with this strike. She is one of my friends in the union, in the Screen Actors Guild, who knows more about the union than most people that I personally know. Most of my friends who are actors don't know as much about the union and about our contracts and about the way the union works as she does. She's the person I always go to whenever I have a question about my contracts and things like that. And I think she was the right person to go to. She does a great job. So I'm not going to drag this intro out any longer. You know what's going on. solidarity forever. I'm going to be out there on the picket lines. Please support us. Here we go. Let's do it. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my good friend Ali Kincaid about the Screen Actors Guild and how we are on strike. Right now, we're live. We're live on YouTube, and great shirt. I should have worn my shirt. I have a shirt.
Yeah, wear your shirt.
Come that on. I got at one of the things, and I don't have it, but you got it on.
Okay. And you can get a new shirt when we start picketing that says SAG-AFTRA strong.
Oh, I will. Oh, I will.
Good.
SAG-AFTRA
shirt. This is from Ads Go Union. So I actually made it into a crop top. So that it was just a catch-all SAG-AFTRA shirt. So I cut off the specifics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Making a little crop top. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Hot strike summer.
Yeah. Bring it. Yeah. Hot strike summer. I love that.
Because that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about hot strike summer. How are you feeling today? Like, we've been out there being homies with the WGA and trying to stand in solidarity and be friends. But do you feel any different today knowing that it's like us now and that it's like our bottom line and our paychecks? How do you feel?
I feel really, really good, honestly, because it's as I was – so we voted like overwhelmingly for the strike authorization. It was a 97.9%. I have my notes
That's
here.
Sick. That's sick.
Yes, with a 47.69% turnout. Everybody's tuning out because I'm saying numbers probably.
That's actually crazy though that like half of union members were like, I don't really care.
Yeah. Well, no. So, but that's huge because like a half the union turning out is more than ever turns out. And our last contract ratification vote, it was a 27% turnout, which was historic. So this is almost double that historic turnout.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So people care and people are ready. And I think it's just such a great time to strike because the writers are already striking. And so it puts a lot of pressure on the studios. It was an easy choice, I think, for a lot of people because they were like, I'm not auditioning anyway. Like, I'm not getting a lot going on anyway. As we've been gearing up to start picketing, the WGA has been super, super helpful and has been like training our strike captains, and like our strike captains have been shadowing them. So it's just been a really, really nice show of solidarity in the other direction already. So, I mean, obviously it's scary to just be like, we're not going to work anymore, but it's the only way.
Here's a question. This is not something I texted you before because I texted you like a list of questions that I might ask you, but there's going to be a few that, but here's something that just comes to mind because I just got off the phone with my brother. My brother called me and he was like, so what does this mean? What do you think? And he was like, because he like read that Bob Iger article too. And he was like, well, Bob Iger thinks that you guys are being unreasonable. And I was like, well, Bob Iger is a fucking multimillionaire who needs to shut his goddamn mouth. And I was like, that's stupid. Mostly what I said to my brother on the phone is I was like, I don't know what the producers are thinking. Like, and that's the question I want to ask you is like, what are they thinking? Like when you're like, yeah, it's a good time to do this because the writers are already going. I'm like, yeah, we are like fully clamping the vice down here. It's like, hey guys, this means that it's done, that the party's over. Like that you cannot keep go. There's no more production. Like we could kind of limp along without writers on set. If the script is already done, we could limp along in production and not have the writers present to do any necessary rewrites or to clarify any questions that people might have about the script. Mm-hmm. That's fine. We can limp along. No actors. We're done.
No actors.
That's it.
And we can't even audition right now. Like, I was in the audition process for a movie that was, like, the outside dates were, like, after the strike is over. And, like, now, like, that is just completely shut down. There's not even any auditioning. Like, no, like, casting can happen now. Like, there's just so much more has been shut down. And so, yeah, what are the producers thinking is a great question. I honestly think, so all of those articles that made the producers look like cartoon villains came out, like, a day before we were supposed to stop negotiations. And I think that that was a scare tactic. I think they were trying to be like, look how tough we are. We're not going to stop this until every writer, like, they didn't say every writer, until writers start, like, losing their homes and apartments, which is just horrible. Like, what a horrible thing to
which,
say.
Which, again, I agree with you that I'm like, I think it was, like, a kind of, like, strong man authoritarian bully tactic to scare us. But I'm like, all that's doing is making not only us more resolved in our position against you, but also, like, the public, I think, like, public opinion of just, like, what you're, where you're just like, well, we're richer than them and we can outlast them. Mm-hmm. It's okay. We're going to wait till they're all evicted from their homes and they come back to the table groveling for the crumbs from our, that we're willing to give them. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't, I don't know. Again, I'm like, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Like, they've done so much PR for us.
Yeah. there's so much of this that's just like, that really speaks to how astronomically, comically out of touch people can become with exorbitant wealth. That it's like, you're just so out of touch here that really, really basic demands are being made and you're just like, absolutely not. That people are like, hey, don't give my job to an AI, please. Can we have that in the contract? And it's like, no, we can't have that in the contract. And it's like, well, okay then. Yeah. Like, I can't do business with you.
Yeah. It's, and that's, and we haven't, I really, I'm hoping that SAG comes out, because again, this is, we're recording this like 1 hour after the press conference. And so I'm hoping that SAG comes out with something similar to what the WGA did. If people haven't seen, the WGA put out a list of like, here's the things that we wanted. And then here was the AMPTP's response. And in so many cases, the AMPTP's, that's the producers, their response was that they refused to even engage with it. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that they have just completely refused to engage with was, we wanted to do revenue sharing with the streamers. Basically, like, if you are on, if you were on Squid Game and that got watched 100 million times, you should be compensated. Your residual structure should, and the producers are like, oh, well, but like, we don't share our data, our streaming data. Well, yeah, because then people would ask for this. So they refused to engage with that proposal. They refused to counter. They refused to do anything. They were like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, it's like, obviously under this new system, you would have to share that information. Like, we know that you don't. We're saying that we would have to have access to that information so that we could come up with a pay scale that would make sense according to how.
And we know that you have that information, that you keep track of that information, because Ted Sarandos is bragging about how more people watch Orange is the New Black than Game of Thrones. It's like, well, how do you know that? Because you keep.
Because you obviously you have that information.
Yeah, because you're a business.
Yeah.
And always revenue sharing. And that actually is, so I was doing some research on the 1980s strike.
Okay.
And that's something.
This is why I asked you to come do this, because I knew you would do this. This is perfect. Yeah.
So the strike in 1980, one of the things that we asked for was a portion of the gross revenue from home video sales, and that's one of the things that we struck over, and we ended up getting 4.5% of the gross revenue of home video sales.
Dope.
So it's not an unprecedented ask. This is like a new way of doing residuals. It requires changing the, you know, business model a little bit and changing the pay structure. But I think we can do that, you guys.
Yeah. I think that my big beef with like, the producers is like that they're trying to make like their bad business decisions our problem. And it's like, that's not my problem that like you're running your streaming platform in like a bad way.
Right.
Like, especially like Disney Plus, like Bob Iger. I'm like, hey, don't make 600 shows a year. How about like, how about just like do a little less production, like, but don't like make it, don't make the solution to the problem paying me less. Like, that's not the solution to the problem. Like, I just think that you guys are like producing way too much stuff, and all of the stuff that you produce costs way too much. Like, your budget for all this stuff is just way too high. So there are other, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because it's like, oh, none of these streaming services are operating in a profit. Is that because you're paying yourselves a lot of money? I don't know. I haven't done that math, but
yeah, if your salary is $50 million or $100 million or $200 million, and you're like, my platform doesn't run at a profit. It's like, well, then what if you made $100 million less?
Yeah. We don't have to pick up all your yachts. We just think you should only have one.
Yeah. There's some profit lying around for you. Okay. So this makes sense. Let's take it back here. Let's take it back and let's lay some groundwork. Let's pretend that nobody listening has any idea. They've heard of the Screen Actors Guild because they've heard of like the SAG Awards or whatever, but let's just take it down to like, what is the Screen Actors Guild? You know, like kind of like what is our union and how does it work for us? I'm going to say this too. I'm going to give this caveat too, that like the reason why I had you on is because you're one of my friends in the industry who I feel like has always done a lot to educate yourself about how to utilize the union for your benefit as an actor. And like, you want to know exactly what the union rules are and what the contract says and all this stuff. And I've always been an actor who's just been like, I don't know anything about any of that stuff. They tell me when I have to pay them money and I give them money and I don't, and then like, I don't really know. Like, and I'm never like aware, like people are like, hey, did you check your pay stub? Like, did they charge you extra for this or did they pay you? And I'm like,
I've literally been like, Austin, what was the deal with that movie? Did they move you from a daily to a weekly? And we're like,
I'm like, oh geez, I don't know. And that's like, I think the reason why I've been like that for so long is that my mindset as an actor has always been like, nobody cares about my career but me. Like, I'm the only one. I'm like, there's this fall. I think I've had this cynical view that like, there's this like false solidarity where like other actors and other people in the industry can help me out. But really, if my career is going to happen, it's going to be because I will it to be so. And I've sort of like gotten into this state of just being like, I have to be in it for myself. Like, that's the only way anything's ever come about for me. But like, I don't know, this year in particular and these strikes, I've really felt this like all of a sudden this like teamwork sense of like, no, you know what, I'm actually really glad that I'm a union member and a union actor, and I'm really glad that like I have the tool of collective bargaining at my disposal to like come to the table with the force and the might of all of my peers, and that I don't have to just by myself be like, could you pay me a little bit more? Or could, you know, like, who do I go to about this person who was kind of shitty to me on set? And anyway, so I'm eager to learn more about what our union is and how it works. And I will, with that caveat, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about what our union is. And
that reminds me that I meant to say at the beginning of this, that I am not an official representative of SAG-AFTRA. I am not the only people who are authorized to speak on behalf of SAG-AFTRA are Duncan Crabtree Ireland, our national executive president, Duncan, I'm sorry if that's not your title, and Fran Drescher, who's our union president, and then some communications people. Like, those are the only people who are speaking, like, on behalf of SAG-AFTRA. I'm just speaking as a civilian. Anyway, so the Screen Actors Guild was founded in 1933, and it was in response to the studio system, in response to, producers essentially owning actors and just forcing them to work under horrible conditions, really long hours, and they really had no recourse, especially like the like day player actors, like the stock actors at the studio. The stars were like, we're fine. And the stars didn't initially want to join SAG until they decided to be good people. Humphrey Bogart was an early supporter of SAG, so hooray for him. And so, yeah, so it was this, it started out as this union of like 40 people and and then grew to like 4,000 in like 3 weeks. And ever since then, the Screen Actors Guild has fought for better wages and working conditions for performers. Performers includes like anybody who appears on camera or is voiced or any. So actors, stunt people, dancers, singers, background artists, voiceover artists, stand-ins, people who do like dubbing into other languages, all of that is covered union work under this contract. And then it extends beyond. SAG-AFTRA also covers commercial performers. We also cover like a lot of broadcast, just all kinds of on-camera and voiceover work. And so every 3 years, there are a bunch of contracts in SAG, and they're always like rotating. So like every 3 years, the TV theatrical contract is up for renegotiation. There's also a commercial contract. There's also a network code contract. There's a ton of contracts. But this one is the TV theatrical contract. And in those negotiations, we try to get better wages and working conditions. So better wages would be raises to our minimums. The vast majority of actors work at scale, which is set by the union, which has become even more important because like 5-10 years ago, I know a lot of actors who had quotes who worked consistently above scale, and the studios are not honoring that anymore. They're like, oh, we're just going to pay everybody scale. And so really the only response to that is, okay, well, we need to raise scale then if that's all anybody's going to get unless they're a name actor. So that's wages. That also includes contributions to our pension plan, contributions to our health plan, what overtime pay looks like, what penalties for not paying us look like. So all of that, and then working conditions, which is how long can we work? What safety are we afforded on set? All of that stuff. So that is all stuff that the union covers. And then frankly, like without unions, it's a race to the bottom because we're all artists and we all just want to do our art. And if somebody's like, I'll pay you $10 to come do your art, we're probably like, money? You want to give me money? And so the union also sort of protects us from ourselves.
Yeah. Artists are notoriously easy to exploit and manipulate because we are just hungry to just be out there. We want to just tell stories. We want to practice our craft. And I even think that we're conditioned in some ways by our education to accept exploitation. I mean, I just remember being taught growing up that it's like there's a line of people behind you that'll take your job if you're not grateful.
Right.
If you don't just say yes, thank you, and please, and just mind your P's and Q's, they'll fire you and they'll replace you with someone else. And just this idea that like I'm so lucky to be in the position I'm in, and that I'm so replaceable, and that I'm so expendable, and like so I should be excited for any.
And the myth of like the starving artist, that's really normal. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's stupid. I think that's bullshit to have like this whole craft be like not valued, and even though it makes people so much money. And I think that, that's another thing that we're, it's sort of romanticized in a lot of TV and film made by these producers, like this idea of like just struggling and like not doing it for the money. Like, I'm sorry, this is the thing that I went to school for. I'm a professional. I would like to be paid. Yeah, I am kind of in it for the money. We should all be in
it. Well, I live in capitalism. Like I live in a capitalist society, and like I have bills to pay. Like period. I did not start doing this because I thought that it was a great way to make money.
Right.
Nobody does. Like we're not like, and that is, I think that's something that's unique about our union and artists unions in general is like, I want Starbucks workers to unionize because I think that unions are good for workers. And I think it's good for workers to have collective bargaining, but like, it's not many people's dream job to work at Starbucks. Whereas like we have a union full of people who are like, I opted out of career paths where I probably could have made more money and had more security.
Yeah.
Right. And I chose to do this because it's what I'm passionate about. And it's what it's the only thing I want to do in the world. But that being the case, I shouldn't be taken advantage of in the workplace just because I'm here because I really want to be here. And it's like, and you know that I would be here for $10 a day if that's all you could offer me. You know, and that I've done that in my life, that I've done projects for free. You and I did a play together last year for free.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like it's like, which I shouldn't say because I'm a equity member, an actor's equity member as well.
You were a producer on the play though.
That's right. I was a producer on the play. this is the nature of what we do, and what's so interesting about our union specifically is that it's made up of a bunch of people who are like, yeah, you got me, I probably would just show up and do this for free because I love it that much, mm-hmm. but since this is what I want to do with my life, and since this is a thing that makes a lot of people a lot of money, I think I should make some of that money too if I'm helping make them that money.
Yeah.
And
this is a lot of the things we're asking for is like, we want just like a percentage of what you are making. So if you don't make any money, we don't want, you know, like residuals is a great example of that. It's like, oh, if you're not making money off of this, that's fine. We won't take any money. But if you are making money off of it, like, it's just so as a reasonable person, that just seems so reasonable to me.
Yeah. If the show's popular, if the show's converting into subscriptions and keeping people subscribing to your platform and everything like that, and I'm in the show, I just want a percentage of that money. But if I'm in a show that doesn't do well for you and not a lot of people watch and you cancel it after a season and it just doesn't, not a lot of people are going to your plat and you want to drop it off the platform just so it's not taking up server space and stuff like that because no one's watching it, then okay, yeah, you don't need a, all right, great. But like, if yeah, it's like, the hit show.
I see. So yeah.
What'd you say? Sorry.
Like, I'm sad, but I see the numbers. So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Two things about that. First thing is that I think this is something that I want to make really clear to like your listeners who are not as nerdy about the union as me, is that actors, the vast majority of SAG actors do not make a living. People think of actors and they think of people who are making a bunch of money. They think of celebrities. And like I had my best year ever as an actor last year. I had an incredible year. I worked a ton. I made $35,000 as an actor.
That's crazy.
I was like, oh my God, like I'm doing so good. But when I think about it, I'm like $35,000 in Los Angeles. So I say that just to say that we aren't being greedy. This is not Brad Pitt wanting more money, although give that man whatever money he wants. We're saying give us more money. Give the people who can barely afford to be here but who are populating these shows.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was a theater actor for a very long time, and like it's even worse there in that union where it's like, what's that?
You're still a theater actor.
Yes.
Anytime.
Yeah. But I would do a full year of nothing but shows where I'd be doing like, sometimes I'd be doing 2-3 shows at once, and I'd be very fulfilled as an artist and I'd be very full in my heart, but I'd make $20,000. Like the whole year. And I'd be like, I worked all year long and I just went from show to show to show. And I like, that's what I would pull in, you know, for a whole year of like, I just went boom, 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 boom. But like, and that's even tougher because, you know, theaters don't make money and they require.
That's a lot.
Yeah. They rely on like literally like tax grants and things like that. And
right.
Yeah. To be financially viable. But yeah, I think it's a good point that you bring up about Brad Pitt and those people in our industry too. You talked about people who were able to get themselves to a level where they have a quote and they're working above scale. And that was a thing for a while. But like now it really is only like.
Ever heard of.
Right.
None of these people who are my friends who like used to have a quote. That's nobody you've ever heard of. So that is not impacting that. Like Brad Pitt still has his quote.
Mm-hmm.
you know. So yeah, like these, yeah, my friends who used to work at like double scale, now they're like, no, we're not doing it.
Right. And I think like you talked about the beginning of the union where a lot of the big name stars were like, I don't need a union. I'm doing well. I've got a good contract with the studio and I'm sitting pretty. And it was important for people like Humphrey Bogart to get involved. And it's still so important for us today to have the, I mean, all of the named actors in the world today are members of this union. And like there are, and they don't have to be. And it's really important that they are, because at the end of the day, it's like, Tom Hanks doesn't need SAG-AFTRA to negotiate his rate for whatever movie he's doing. Like that's handled between him and his team, and he has his own rate that he works out with whoever's producing the film. And maybe he gives his friend Bob Zemeckis a nice deal because they're buddies. I don't know. But like that's not a thing that like the union is negotiating on the behalf of Tom Hanks. But Tom Hanks being a member of our union does give us incredible leverage and power at the table to say, if we go on strike, so does he, you know, and that's big. And
yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's cool of all those people to do that.
Yeah.
To be,
and, I mean, even honestly, even name actors, I'm like, it isn't even about the name actors. I think it was Susan Sarandon. I don't know. I should have looked this up. Lost her health insurance in 2020. You have to make, you have to make $26,000 a year to qualify for union health insurance, which is excellent, by the way. I'm on it. Big flex that I made.
I'm on it right now too, and it's great. It's,
those $25 copays, we love it. Ooh,
great.
But she lost her health insurance during COVID because she didn't have any work and because residuals stopped paying after a while. After a show has run so many times, there's a cap. And so, I think people know that name. And she, it's not guaranteed. Like, that's, like, you could be famous. You could Oscar and then never work again. I've heard so many interviews of people being like, yeah, after my Oscar, I thought people would just come knocking and nobody did. So even for celebrities, it isn't guaranteed, but that's not as strong of an argument as, hey, but me.
Yeah. So, okay, we've talked a little bit about like what our union is and like what it does and how it works and who's a part of it now and how it started. And now it's like, it's kind of like any actor that you see on a TV show or movie is probably a member of our union now. It's a very, very large union. Also, the fact that most of our members are not working at any one given time. That's a kind of another unique thing about actors' unions, is that like we have a lot of unemployed members of our union, which is also, I think, why it's impressive that almost 50% of the union voted to authorize this strike. Because a lot of this
workplace that people can be like, hey, did you vote? Did you vote? Like, it's
right.
I've talked to people on staff who are like, I talked to an organizer on staff who used to organize healthcare workers. And they were like, this is so much harder because you can't just be in the break room and be like, hey, do you guys know your rights? It's so, yeah, the fact that we have organized to this degree is really incredible.
It's really cool. And I think it also says something. This is kind of the thing about this conversation that I want to get into a little bit later. There's one more thing I want to talk about before we get to this, but like, is just sort of like why people who aren't in the entertainment industry should give a shit about what's going on right now and what this says about the larger like cultural moment that we're in. And I do think that that is tied to like why we have such strong organization right now, is I think that culturally there is sort of a feeling of like, we're all getting a little fed up with corporate greed and with the unsustainability of late stage capitalism. And I do want to talk about that later. Before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about like, could you just help us with what are the specifics of what we were trying to get with this contract renegotiation? I know that we talked a little bit about that, but like, what are the things that we wanted? You talked about hopefully our union leadership will come out with something where they say, here's what we asked for and here's what they said. I'd like to see that too. But are you aware right now?
So I will talk just generally because I was I went to a lot of the meetings for where we decided what we were going to negotiate for. I wasn't on the negotiating committee. But so some of that stuff, the stuff that we talked about, like in specifics, is maybe still being kept close to the vest for like strategic reasons. But in general, we are asking for raises, bigger raises than we normally ask for because of inflation. We are asking for AI protection. We are asking for increases in streaming residual structure, and also the payment of residuals for certain platforms. So there's a section of the contract that has to do with AVOD, which stands for ad-supported video on demand. This is Tubi, Roku, Freevee, all of that. If you watch a show on those networks, none of those actors get residuals.
Wow.
And there's a show on two, I don't know what network it's on, but it's called Jury Duty, and it got nominated for Emmys. Like, these are amazing shows. Or like the Bosch spinoff is on Freevee. Like,
yeah, Jury Duty is like a big show right now. And it's essentially like, if you watch Freevee, it's like, it's essentially like network TV light. Like, it doesn't have quite the ad breaks as network TV, but it's like, it's like watching network TV. It's like, it's got like three ad breaks throughout the episode, and then they're like three ads each. Mm-hmm. But it's like, that's revenue right there that should be shared with the artists.
Yeah. And there is no revenue being shared with us right now. And even like, I've read stuff about how more, and the negotiating committee knows this, that more and more streaming services and networks and stuff are seeing the AVOD model be useful, because it's sort of like the network model, they can sell ads. And so I think AVOD is going to become a bigger space. And so it would be important for us to get residuals if it wasn't going to grow at all, because those people deserve to be paid. But we think it's going to grow. And so we need residuals there as well.
Well, and it most likely will grow. And I think that that's how we sort of got into this problem in the first place, right? Is like, when we were first building these contracts for online shows, streaming shows, streaming wasn't what it is now. And mm-hmm. we were trying to project forward and go, well, what if this becomes sort of the main thing? But it's like, at the time it was like webisodes and like web series, and it was like such a new thing, and people were like, oh, what, like a show that someone produces for YouTube or what? Like, there wasn't a whole lot of original programming on streaming platforms. And I think that's sort of, you're right with something like the AVOD model, where it's like, this is sort of newer-ish, this idea of like, it's still streaming, but it's just ad-supported and you can't skip through the ads. They're a part of it. That's how this platform works. But it's like, okay, then, like, that's a new thing. And that I could see that getting more popular, maybe even replacing network TV eventually. Mm-hmm. But then we have to have a new contract for that. We can't just sort of like try to kind of Frankenstein fit the old contract to that model, you know?
So that's huge. And yeah, just an example of how we need to make our contract fit with the times. I mean, we haven't even gotten into AI. So we talked about how they just refused to engage with the streaming revenue sharing proposal. The other specific that I know is in regards to AI. The producers last night at midnight were like, we can't believe that we had a like groundbreaking AI proposal and they didn't go for it. And so somebody in the press conference asked, what was that? It was that background artists get scanned when they're on set and get paid a day rate. And then their likeness can be used in perpetuity. It's a Black Mirror episode for sure.
I can't believe they did. This is where I'm like, what do the producers think? Because I'm like, they're like, we can't believe they didn't go for it. It's like, what? Where? What?
Who would want that?
Being rich is
already been happening.
Being rich is a trip.
Like, people in our meetings were like, I'm a background performer, and people have said this on Twitter too, so I feel comfortable saying this, that happened in our meetings, that like, I'm a background performer, and they took me into a trailer on my break and they said, hey, do you like, we're gonna scan you now so that we can like make the room look larger. And so background artists are already being scanned, and everybody's like, I don't think that was ever allowed to happen. We're gonna have to do something about that. But yeah, it's just so like they want to make, because a lot of performers who make their health insurance through the union do it because they are background performers. Background performers work like the most consistently, and they're treated like shit already. And now we're wanting to make it essentially like you can be a background performer for one day. For your whole career. And then also, like, what if somebody does, because a lot of people do background as just their job, like they're not interested in principal work, they're just like, this is how I make money. So that sucks for them. And on another level, it sucks for performers who are doing background work to sort of supplement their other acting work. It weakens their like brand later, like if they like become famous and then the studio like owns their likeness because they got scammed for background because they needed a few bucks.
I think this kind of speaks to a larger problem of just like how we utilize technology in modern filmmaking. And like people have been saying this now, like audiences have been saying this like pretty much for the entire 30-year period that we've been like integrating CGI more and more heavily into films, is that we're like, hey, we're all right with it as a tool. And like, obviously it can make the movie going experience. It can heighten it because we can do all kinds of things that we didn't used to be able to do. But like, as much as possible, we really like things to be in camera. Like we really just do. Like we just respond more to like real sets and practical action. So as much as you can possibly do, we really like that. And then like, but then Disney will be like, ooh, how about this this new technology? What's the thing called that's the LED screen? They got a name for it. It's like the Void or something. You know what I'm talking about? It's called like the...
Is that the thing they shot The Mandalorian on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's like some douchey name. But I'm like, people don't like it. Because like we can tell. And it, yep. Even if it...
Yeah.
Even if it looks good, we're like, nah, there's something about it. Like, and I think that this is the same thing with like AI art and like people, it's like, cool. I'm fine with the fact that like you can teach a computer to like collect millions of images and then create an amalgam of those images and like fart out something new. And it's like, look how interesting. It's like, cool. I still prefer something painted by a human because I don't go to art just for a pretty picture. I go to art for like a person expressing something about the human experience. And like, I don't think that creatively the people who are making the money decisions and the business decisions understand that that's what audiences aren't connecting with when they overuse technology in these weird ways, is we're like, I still want it to be real. And I know that that might not be as cost effective for you, but like, that's what I respond to more. And that's what I'm interested in, is like real people telling me a real human story.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's like, obviously CGI is an incredible tool and we can do a lot with it and we can bring dinosaurs back from the dead and do all these interesting things. But it's like, when it's just used because it's like, we can save money. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I get it, but I'd rather have you just on that real set. And I can tell the difference. Something in me, I was talking to my brother about this and I was like, think if they could like fully simulate sports, like basketball, like they take all the information, all the data, all the stats of all these different basketball players, and then they digitize them and they create an AI rendering of like Michael Jordan in his prime playing LeBron James in his prime. And it's like, maybe that's interesting to look at as an experiment. Like, yeah, oh, interest
at once.
Yeah. But it's like, at the end of the day, I want to watch real people play real people. That's what I want to watch.
Yeah. I was Austin. I cried at Cirque du Soleil. I went to Vegas for the first time. Highly recommend Vegas if you haven't checked it out.
If you don't know about this place called Las Vegas.
A place called Las Vegas. It's very underground. It's so cool and trendy. No, but we went to Cirque du Soleil.
Which one?
We went to O.
Okay.
It's the water one. And it was amazing, but I also just like, I had this like AI thing in mind and I was crying because I was like, AI will never replace this. Because if it wasn't human beings doing that insane shit, I wouldn't care.
It's a great example. It's like an AI could render human-looking acrobats doing crazier stuff than the Cirque du Soleil acrobats can do.
Uh-huh.
But first of all, the Cirque du Soleil acrobats can do things that seem genuinely superhuman, and B, the thing that makes it cool is that they are human. Like,
yeah.
It's no longer cool. And it's just, again, like action sequences in movies. It's like when something is done in camera.
Yeah. We are in a wide and we actually see the fight.
Yeah.
I actually care.
Yeah. Tom Cruise just rode a goddamn motorcycle off of a cliff in whatever, Sweden or something. But I'm like they built a ramp and then they made the ramp CGI as a mountain. But I'm like, but sure. He's driving off that mountain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and that's sick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Or like, something that I'm just going to get nerdy about acting. Something that I love about watching a great performance is that it's messy. Is that it's not perfect.
Mm.
Love watching somebody like stumble over their words and like mess up a line a little bit and just make it more human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's it, just bringing it back to like capitalism, like that is what people are going to actually connect to. And I think that AI is something that these producers think is a way out, and they're going to discover that is not a way out. And by then it will have been 5 years, you know? And so it's like, we can't, because there are people being like, okay, great. Like, let's just like, let them fail. Let them like have AI write scripts and let them be bad. And it's like, well, we don't actually like people are, these are people's jobs and people's livelihoods. So,
yeah. Again, it's that thing of like, don't make your bad creative decisions, yeah. Business, my problem. Cause you're forgetting the fact that like, you're the business end of things and we're the creative end of things. And that symbiosis is like, if you honor that, you'll be more successful. And look at like a company like A24, they won Best Picture last year with their highest budget movie they've ever made. And it was like $25 million. Like it was like the most they'd ever spent on a movie. And it was like, like a quarter of the budget that big studios spend on like
R-rated comedy. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. It's just sort of like, no, that's, and what that company has done, the reason why A24 is like taking over the film industry and like owning at the box office and stuff is, I mean, like Past Lives right now, like keeps selling out at theaters, and Past Lives probably cost like $5 million to make.
Right.
And like, it's
a perfect example of a movie that like could not have been done with AI. And that's why it's doing so well. Like we are watching these human beings just be human beings.
Mm-hmm. In a script that's written by a person that is so intensely human that it's like, this script is so, and it's just like, I don't, and even if you could train a computer to write me a script that has just as much emotional intelligence and resonance as that script, I wouldn't care as much because it's not coming from a person's personal perspective on the human experience. And I'm like, that's at the end of the day what I'm interested in. And I just don't think that these people who are thinking about, you know, dollars and cents and decimals and dividends and profit margins are aware that like they're in a creative industry.
Yeah.
And that they are there to make money and to, you know, be profitable. But at the end of the day, the thing that makes them their profit is being successful creatively and making good art and making art that connects with an audience successfully. And it's like, this isn't just about figuring out the cheapest way to do it. This is this is about figuring out the right way to do it. I just did a movie where we had like 200 extras on set every day. And I fucking loved those people. And they were the same people every single day. And I got to know all of them and like got to know them like as people. And like, I got to watch them all like become more and more invested in the story that we were telling and become like a part of our story. And I just was like, thank God we didn't animate these people with into the background, because it would have made our job harder as actors in the principal cast. And I think it would have taken something away from the film overall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a cost that the film has to incur, you know, but I still look at their job and I'm like, we're still not paying them a lot for what they're doing. They're here every day and we're giving them a couple free meals and $150.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's not great, but I'm like,
people make a living that way. People, that's real money to people. Yeah. It's,
this is a question that I think we've sort of already covered, but like maybe we can go a little bit more into depth on it. Is like, because I at the very beginning I was like, I think actor striking really helps to tighten the vice a little bit, and that's sort of the question, is just like, what does a SAG strike do for the WGA strike? How do these help each other? Do you and I guess another question I would tack onto that is like, does this make you more optimistic? Because it does for me.
It does.
Makes me be like, I'm like, oh, I think that we've got them now. But like, what do you think that this does?
So the I'm trying to decide if I want to talk about history first or if I want to talk about I'll talk about history later, because I think it relates to something else that you wanted to talk about as well. So yeah, I feel like this is more powerful than just a WGA, just WGA strike. That's they've been killing it. Because there are, like, the contracts aren't exactly the same, and so they don't cover the exact same amount of work. So there are now definitely productions that were not included before that are included now. Yeah, actors can't act anymore. Kim Kardashian can't cross that picket line and do American Horror Story anymore, which was, like, the only show that was still shooting. I think Paper Apps now, I don't know. And so there's that element to it. There's the fact that we are not allowed to do any promotion right now. The Oppenheimer cast, when they heard that the strike was called, which the strike doesn't officially take effect until midnight tonight, but in solidarity, the Oppenheimer cast heard about that and left the red carpet. We love it. And so, yeah, no red carpets, no press junkets, no, like, posting on social media about your projects, like, nothing. And so the studios are going to, and the studios rely on these like star names to sell their films, to like go on late night shows and like talk about like funny things that happened on set to get people to go to the movie. And so, yeah, we are not doing any promotion. And so that's just going to be devastating. That, by the way, is something that President Drescher postulated about why the AMPTP agreed to a two-week extension of the negotiations, because we negotiated for 3 weeks and then they called for an extension, and apparently then the AMPTP just kept like canceling meetings with SAG. And so Fran's theory, and I think other people's theory as well, she's just the one who said it, is that the studios just wanted 2 more weeks of promoting their summer movies. They just wanted 2 weeks to promote, to have Margot Robbie kill it and wear all the Barbie outfits, you know, before she stopped.
Yeah, it was never like a good faith thing. They weren't like, oh, we think we're close to finding a solution here. It was just like, nah, we just like got some big movies that we got to like get a little bit more promo out of.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So, and so that tells me like that is meaningful to them. So they're not like the promotion machine is going to stop, and that's huge. And then, yeah, there's like, there are no auditions. We're not allowed to audition right now. And so the pipeline that, because the writers are at like the beginning of a pipeline. And so the effects of a writer's strike are going to be felt further down the line. But actors are much further down the pipeline. And so now anytime, because with the writer's strike in 2007, which is the last time the writers went on strike and got streaming residuals, the studios had like backlogged a bunch of scripts. So they were like ready to go. We're like, well, they're like, well, we'll just make these things now. And they can't do that. They can't use the same tactics that they used with the writer's strike in 2007. So that's really powerful.
Right. Like the thing I just did, like we were able to do production on this second movie because the scripts were already done. Yeah. And so, but like if the actor's strike had taken effect before we started shooting, we wouldn't have done it.
Or in the of production, if you were still on production, everybody would have just walked off set. Yeah,
would have been, we have to come back to this maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months, maybe a year later.
Yeah.
And try to like match everybody's looks to finish the movie, or just reshoot everything. Yeah. You know, like it could be devastating to a production that size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is one reason it's more powerful than just WGA. The other thing, which I think this goes into the reason I was going to bring this up second, is it goes into that other question you had about why people shouldn't cross the picket line, is just some more union history. So there are two strikes that I want to talk about. The last time the writers and the actors struck together was in 1960. And that's only because the cycles of negotiation are different. It isn't like, yeah. So it's the fact that everybody was negotiating at the same time gave us this leverage anyway. So yeah, the last time was 1960. And out of those negotiations, I don't know that the writers got these things. I assume they did too. I'm sorry, I don't know. We got residuals and a pension plan and a health plan. All of that came from both unions being on strike in 1960. Just transform. Wow. Because that, when people are like, oh, I don't know about joining SAG, I'm like, your pension and your health and residuals, like the three things that I say to people about why they should join SAG all came from the last time both unions.
Somebody just said in the comments, and I think that this is a funny comment. I just read this post from Brian Behar. How rare is an actor/writer double strike? It was so long ago that Ronald Reagan was on the side of organized labor. That's great. That's true.
Incredible. That's incredible. I love that.
Yeah.
It's been a while. And that was really powerful. And so then the other strike, which I mentioned earlier, the last time we struck this contract, the TV theatrical contract, was in 1980. And in 1980, when we went on strike, so usually our new contracts, we get like a 3% raise, like keeping pace with like cost of living increases, and we like fight hard for that. And then we're like, yeah, we did it. The last time, so when we went on strike in 1980, we got a 32.5% raise. So that's what happened last time we went on strike for this contract. And then we got 4.5% of home media gross revenue, which is really similar to this.
Which is actually dope.
So dope.
Like 4.5% of like video. That's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
So we got huge, huge gains the last. So like, I feel like 1960, 1980 are sort of the precedents for this strike.
Right.
We got huge gains last time. And
all of this again, just makes me be like, what is the AMPTP thinking? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, they're so scared. They're like, everybody's being so, don't, they're trying to sway public opinion away from the actors. And I mean, I've had friends be like, in the WGA, be like, I can't wait for the actors to join us because nobody cares about writers. Everybody cares about actors. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. I don't think that, but certainly actors are more visible. So.
Yeah. Well, and and us doing this together definitely means that it's like, well, now, like, all the things that you were excited about, the season twos or threes of your show, like, it's going to be a while, and maybe, hopefully not, you know?
Yeah. Call up Bob Iger, everybody, if you're listening, and be like, get back to the table.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild. I guess this goes into, that same question of like, why should non-union people not scab is part of a question too of like, why should people who aren't part of the entertainment industry at all, or people who aren't part of any union, why should they give a shit about what's going on here? And I do think that there is something being said right now in this cultural moment about like where we are, mm-hmm. with our current economic system, and about attitudes toward the ultra wealthy, and about the disparity between the ultra wealthy and the working class or lower middle class, and like what our values are as a culture, and if we value the comfort of millionaires and billionaires over the comfort of the ability to pay bills of people in the working class or lower middle class. And I guess, I don't know, yeah, your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So the first thing, this only applies to non-union creators being approached by studios to do work. Just so everybody knows, if you do that, if you are not yet a member of the union and you do work for an AMPTP company while we are on strike, you will not be eligible to join SAG ever. So there's that. That
it's only, pretty serious.
It's very serious because we only, like, the reason we get these gains is because we are able to put pressure. And if that pressure is released by all of these people scabbing, that hurts you because you won't be able to join in the future. And it also hurts all union members because they're not going to get those raises. So that's specific to actors and creators. But yeah, ultimately I feel like we are having this cultural moment where labor is coming back. I'm going to talk about history again because that's my day job.
Great.
About the Gilded Age.
Love it.
Okay. So for those of you who it's been a while since you took AP US history, the Gilded Age was in the late 1800s. And this is when all of the robber barons were around, Carnegie and Rockefeller, et cetera, et cetera. And they had these big corporate monopolies. And so there was super, super wealthy. There was a super, super wealthy class. And then, so the rich were getting richer and the working class, people working in factories, were in horrible conditions. And they were trying to organize. Labor unions come from the Gilded Age. But an issue with the Gilded Age is that we had this string of completely ineffectual presidents that were just corrupt. The differences between the parties was really negligible in a lot of ways. And so this shift had to happen with, and actually both parties went away, essentially, like they remade themselves because the populist party was there to be like, hey, we're going to fight for workers. And then both parties were like, oh no, I guess we also have to do that. And so from the Gilded Age came the Progressive Era, which is where we get all of these worker protections. This is like the birth of unions. You know, SAG is coming off of the Progressive Era. This is where we get things like the Pure Food and Drug Act and national parks and like this golden age of progress. And so my little theory, because history rhymes, is that right now we are in another Gilded Age.
Mm.
And the difference is that workers are way more empowered now. And so they're not going to let it stand. So that's comforting to me because there's historical precedent for things changing. Because I think it can be really discouraging when you look at the wealth disparity in this country and when you look at how, at like the division that has been sown and a lot of the like, you know, people like being on the side of the billionaires because they've been conditioned to. It's comforting to me to know that in this country we have gotten out of that before and that so that probably means that we'll be able to get out of it again because yeah, and I think, yeah, this is the moment. I think this is, I mean, like, shout out to Gen Z, you know, like the most politically involved, and my day job is that I tutor history and other like high school kids, and these high school kids are so sharp, they're really with it, and they care a lot. And so I think that it's becoming cool to care about things and about people. And I think that's like a silver lining of the pandemic is that it showed all of us how much we need each other and like the power of a collective. And that is like the ultimate, like the union is just the ultimate example of the power of the collective.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a thing here of just like a victory for working people anywhere is a victory for working people everywhere. And I think it's not just solidarity amongst union members, but solidarity amongst all working people who are fed up with the top earners in the world, like just hoarding wealth. And right. I do think it's important at the beginning of the episode that you mentioned the fact that like most members of the WGA and SAG are not like super duper wealthy people, that the vast majority of people working in our industry are people who like struggle to make ends meet because we're in this industry because we're passionate about it and because we love doing it. And we are easy to manipulate and easy to exploit because of how much we love it. And, you know, I think that when a lot of people think about people who are in movies or in TV shows or who work in this industry, they think that we're all like really wealthy. And like, it's like, if I see you in a TV show, then you must be making a lot of money. If I see you on, you know, and it's like, no.
You want your raise? You're making $1,000 a day. Yes. Three times a year, you know, like it's
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if my day rate is, $1,200, $1,500 a day, whatever the hell. And it's like, do you make $1,500 a day at work? And it's like, yeah, but that's, but if I'm only working 10 days a year, then.
And by the way, not only we're only being paid for 10 days of work a year, because the rest of the time you're conditioning, you're staying healthy, you are staying available in case anybody wants you. Like, it's a grind. And so, 10 days of paid work a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then when it's like, and you talk to the, you're like, also like the budgets on these things that I'm working on and the money that the people at the top are making and the money that they're throwing around and the numbers that they're just sort of casually chucking around. And then they're getting bent out of shape about giving me an extra $100 here or there. And it's like, yeah, it's just kind of.
Should I talk about the movie I got fired from?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you want to talk some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to talk some shit. No, I'm not going to name it. But I got fired from a movie. It was not my fault. It was, we were still in COVID and they recast the other leads. And so I didn't fit in anymore, but,
brutal.
So it's brutal. But the thing is, they still paid me my whole deal for the movie.
And they had to, cause you had signed.
I had signed and cause hooray for SAG. And so for them, like, if they were really that worried about money, because this was not a huge budget, it's not the biggest budget thing I've ever worked on, but it was a good size budget. If they were that worried about money, they would not have fired me.
Right.
They had to pay another actor more money, which by like the Deadline article came out, because they called me and they were like, oh, it's, you know, that we went a different way. And I was like, that's totally fine. And then the Deadline article came out and they had cast my role with a name actor who everybody
would have.
And I was like, oh, of course. I'm never offended when they do that, because I'm like, great. There's nothing I could have done. I honestly wish that I would have been told that, because that would have been so much easier. But anyway, so like they paid, I mean, I don't know how much more they paid her. Let's just conservatively say that they paid her three times more than me.
Mm-hmm.
The budget for that role quadruples.
Mm-hmm.
Replacing me. And so if it was really all about money, they would have kept me.
Yeah.
You know, so they have the money.
They're just that's such a great story to illustrate that point, that it's just like, not only did they hire someone who cost more, mm-hmm. but also they had to pay out your entire contract. And it was just because it was like, you know what, we're going to go in a slightly different creative direction here. Yeah. And also like, we're going to like make a play that like this more recognizable face maybe will help the marketability of the film. But it's like,
which I'm glad they were able to do. Like it really sucks that I wasn't able to do that project, but one, I guess I'm not as mad because I still got paid. And two, like how great that decisions can be made from like a creative standpoint and not just a business standpoint. And that when decisions are made from a creative standpoint, might cost a little bit more money, but it'll make you more money, right? Like, I'm sure more people are going to watch this because they're fans of this woman's other work. Mm-hmm. So, got to spend money to make money, AMPTP. Come on.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, it's a good thing to illustrate that, like, you know, more or less, a lot of people in our industry are kind of blue collar, working class, lower middle class people who are just trying to get a reasonable percentage of the revenue that is made off of the backs of their labor. And yeah, this is why strikes happen. This is why unions exist. This is why anyone listening to this should care, is like, because you're probably not part of the top earning class in the world, and this probably does in some way affect you.
Mm-hmm. Because also the things that unions fight for impact the rest of us. Like, unions are the reason why we have an 8-hour workday. Unions are the reason why we don't have like child labor. Like, all of these worker protections that aren't specific to a union originated with a union. And then other, and then companies were like, oh no, I don't want my laborers to unionize. I better give them all the stuff that union people get so that they don't unionize. So yeah, like unions fighting for things, protects everybody. And also, I mean, we've just been talking about SAG and WGA. There are so many other unions on strike right now. Hotel workers are on strike. There's a UPS strike. There's like so many strikes happening right now. Hot strike summer, that it just speaks to this cultural movement that isn't just in New York and LA. Like, it's this wider labor movement, which is just really, really exciting.
Hell yeah. Hot strike summer. I love it. And I knew that you were going to be the right person to ask to do this. You did not disappoint. Thank you so much for coming in and doing this. Where can people see you if they want to, follow you and keep up with you? Is there anything you want to pitch to the audience and let them know about yourself?
Well, I would have something to promote, but we're not promoting because of the strike.
Because of the strike. Yeah.
Take that, unnamed network.
Yeah.
No, I love you guys. Hire me again. I'll talk about you later. You can find me on the Instagram at The Real Allie Kincaid. And that's pretty much it.
Word. Great. Word.
You know, but I haven't used it. So I guess I'm the same on Threads.
Oh my God. Threads. I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna. I just like don't know if I can take on another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
But I kind of want to just because I hate Elon Musk that much.
Right, right. That's why I did it. And because you can just really click a button on your Instagram and then you also have a Threads account. I was like, okay.
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
Yeah. And then people automatically, people who follow you on Instagram like will automatically follow you on Threads. So it's like, oh, I have a built-in audience.
Oh, great. I mean, I guess I'll do it then. And I'll have my first tweet say, fuck you, Elon Musk. Let's strike.
Perfect.
Yeah. And it'll be kind of confusing because people will be like, what are you striking against Twitter or something? Or like, yeah.
Give the Twitter strike.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just let it go on.
Yeah. Give us back our check marks.
Yeah.
I never had one. Okay, great. I'll see you out there on the picket line. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'll text you about when I'm going out there. I don't want our many stalkers to know, but we'll be out there.
Yep.
If you want to go picket and then maybe he'll be there. Cause people can picket and support if they are not members of either union. You can just go and be there in solidarity. And that's also really helpful. So.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can just go out and see us and hang out with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
Great point. Okay. Well, friend, thanks for spending some time with me today. I really appreciate it. And
hopefully this wraps up soon and we don't have to do another episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being like month three, what has changed?
Yeah, right. And then we're in a very different tune by then. We're like, you know what? Never mind. I think that.
You know who I want to be best friends with is Bob Iger.
I actually think unions are stupid. yeah. All right, cool. Well, I'm sure I'll see you around. Yeah. Thanks for popping in, and I'll talk to you later. Okay. Goodbye, everyone that's in the comments and everything out there on the internet. Bye-bye. Bye, Allie. Bye. All right, so that's it. I don't really have anything else to say. I don't have anything more to add, really. Just, you know. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. look up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. Yeah, okay, patreon.com/AustinArcher. We'd love to have you over there. We got a bunch of lovely people over there who donate to this show, who donate to this operation, who help this operation stay afloat. And I love those people so, 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 so much. Thank you so much to every single one of them, genuinely from the bottom of my heart. If you have the means and you would like to support this show and join us over there, we'd love to have you. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Subscribe to my YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. That's a thing. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll see you next week. Love you so much. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Bye-bye.